Well, in December of 2004, I was in my first trimester at Bethel Seminary in St. Paul, and it was also the time when my wife Amanda was diagnosed with that rare kidney disease that would one day need a kidney transplant. Well, that day came in 2007, and Amanda and myself and her family were all sitting around the doctor's office learning about how they figure out who's a good match for a kidney transplant, relative and blood work and all of these things. And of course, her family, her mom and her sisters were going to be tested. And there's this thought that came into my head like, well, you should be tested because you're going to be matched. And of course, I said, well, that's not God, because that's ridiculous, right? How would I be a match? Right off the bat, I'm not a relative or anything like that. And then the other thought that went along with that, it's ridiculous because, well, how is that going to work, right? I am the primary caregiver for my wife, Amanda, who has this kidney disease. So how am I going to care for her when we're both recovering from this transplant surgery? That's silly. Of course, God's not telling me that. That's just my own ego, and I think I'm greater than I really am. And how am I going to provide income for those 2 weeks of recovery? How am I going to get my schoolwork done, seminary level, classwork people, and yet 2 weeks where you can't do anything? That's not going to fly well, right? Ultimately, my big question is the question that we all faced. Every human being on the planet has one question that they wrestle with all the time. How will I be provided for? How will I be provided for? That's a basic question for every human being on the planet. And we all answer it in different ways, right? I'm going to provide for myself. I'm going to get what I need. I'm going to have other people provide for me, right? And then if you bring it into a church setting, what do people in that church setting say about how they will be provided for? God will provide, right? It's this very simple thing that, like, at a basic level, we just trust God. We have faith in this God that's going to provide for us. And saying it and living that way is completely different things. And it's actually in the living that statement is where we get really tested. Right? It's actually where we connect the most with our biblical character that we're studying today, Abraham, and his story. It is the foundational thing for him that he connected with and he lived out and he was trying to live out. And the good news about this is that he was not perfect at all with this. He had some really good highlights, right? Some times where you're like, man, knocked it out of the park. That's amazing. Don't know that I could have done that. And other times where you're scratching your head going like, what were you thinking, right? How did you not see this coming, right? And other times where you're just like, I'm not sure if he's really having a good faith in God or not here. It's really kind of a question mark. I'm not really sure with it. But ultimately, what we see in his story is him understanding what it means to address the question of how will I be provided for? And if we're going to say that God provides, then what does it look like and what does it mean to live that out? And it brings up some other questions for me. I'm going to be honest, okay? So if we're in this following Jesus, following after God type of thing, and we have this question about faith, it's where our faith gets tested in this question of who will provide for me or how will I be provided for. That's essential to our faith, is we get tested with that. And if we're going to be tested with that, I want to know some things, right? How do I know when I'm tested? That might be helpful to see it coming, right? How do I know when I'm tested? What happens if I fail the test? I have an important question, right? And then what's the point? What's the point of being tested in my faith or tested in your faith of how will you be provided for, right? What's the outcome? What is it? What does that testing accomplish, right? These are the things that are important to me. And so I invite you into this story of Abraham. We're going to be looking at Genesis chapter 12, and this is the beginning place for Abraham. This is his call, and these first three verses, this little paragraph, is so packed full of stuff, but it's essential for understanding the rest of the story. And what you'll see is that when he gets to his ultimate test in Genesis chapter 22, it's a repeat. It's a repeat of this phrasing here. So let's take a look at Abraham and his story in Genesis chapter 12, starting in verse 1. The Lord said to Abram, so he wasn't Abraham yet, he's Abram. The Lord said to Abram, leave your native country, your relatives, and your families, your father's family, and go to the land I will show you. I will make you into a great nation. I will bless you and make you famous, or make your name great, and you will be a blessing to others. I will bless those who bless you and curse those who treat you with contempt. All the families on earth will be blessed through you. Huge stuff going on here. Some of us have read that so many times, you just like, yep, got it memorized, don't even think it. But we don't actually stop and hear what it's saying, because it's laying out the story of how it's going to unfold in the next several chapters of Abram's life. Right off the bat, we're going to see how he does with this, right? There's a phrase in there. You saw that I highlighted family. That's important. Leaving his father's family, leaving his relatives. This leaving of a family is super important in the storyline of Abram and his faith with God. Right? And if you continue reading Genesis chapter 12, like the next few verses, you hear that what does he do? He does leave, but he brings his nephew Lot with him. Well, he kind of listened to God, right? I left most of the family. And if you read the story, continue through Genesis 22, you're going to see Lot. This nephew Lot, he's a problem. Right? He continues to be a problem. And you got to think that Abram's like, yeah, I really should have left him back home. Right? He was a problem. Right? So that's the first thing where you're like, I'm not really sure. But this line of go to this land, this place that I will show you, right, is a big faith statement. Trust me that I'm going to bring you to the place that you're going to have descendants and be a blessing, and such a huge blessing, a huge nation, that you will be blessing the rest of the nations on the earth. And so Abraham kind of does that, but then he has a huge blunder, right? The land that God is showing him has a famine. And so he decides, let's go to a different land, Egypt, and go there. And as he goes there to get food for himself and his family, he lies about who he is and who Sarah is, his wife. Right? She's my sister, because he's afraid that someone will kill him to take his wife. First of all, don't give the Egyptians a benefit of the doubt, apparently, right? Though they're such barbarians, that's the way that they would operate. But the other thing is that whose hands is he trusting with his life? Who is providing for Abram? Abram, right? Right? Okay, God, you're going to lead me this. You're going to show me. I'm going to go there. But times are getting really tough. I'm not sure how you're going to provide for me. So I'm going to take matters into my own hands. This is something that's going to come up time and time again for Abram. In fact, this is something, as you read Genesis 12 through 20, Genesis 22, it's a 35 to 40 year span of his life. And he didn't do it all well, right? It wasn't all a great image or model of what it's like to have faith in God, a God that he's saying is going to bless him and care for him. So 35 to 40 years of some good things and some bad things, times when he is raised to the occasion and his faith is, you're like, yeah, that's great. And other times where you're like, that didn't even make any sense, right? Completely in the wrong with his faith. So when we get to Genesis chapter 22 and we learn that his faith is going to be tested, we sit there and go like, well, what's he going to do? Is he really going to trust this God and faith in this God that this God will take care of him? Or will he take matters into his own hands? What is he going to do? All right? So here's what it is, and you're going to hear how it connects to Genesis chapter 12 if you listen closely. All right? So Genesis chapter 22, starting in verse 1. Sometime later, God tested Abraham's faith. Abraham, God called. Yes, he replied, here I am. Take your son, your only son, yes, Isaac, whom you love so much, and go to the land of Moriah. Go and sacrifice him as a burnt offering on one of the mountains, which I will show you. Did you hear the connecting piece to Genesis chapter 12? Leave your family, leave your son, right? Leave him up onto this mountain, because you're going to sacrifice him there. The place I'm going to show you, right? That's what you're going to do. I'm going to show you where it is. You hear the connecting piece. So it first off, one of the questions that I had is, what happens if you fail the test, right? If you fail the faith test, you get to repeat it. Yeah, you get to take it again. Now, that might or might not be encouraging to you, right? If you're someone like, man, I know that was a test of my faith, and I completely botched it, I want to retake, right? I want to take it again. This might be encouraging to you. For some of us are like, man, it just continues to be that same struggle over and over and over again. You're like, it just bogs you down, right? But you can take it again. In fact, you will take it again. That's what these connecting words show us. From Genesis chapter 12, 35 to 40 years later, he's taking the same test, right? So how is he going to do with this? How is he going to do with this test? And here's the other question. Did you see who knows that he's being tested? Does Abraham know he's being tested? Who knows that Abraham's being tested? His faith is being tested. Well, God knows, but who else knows? Well, you and I know because we just read it, right? It just said it. Like, God tested Abraham's faith right there, black and white. We know that this story is all about God testing Abraham's faith in him. And we need to know how this is going to go. If we do not catch that, the fact that God is asking Abraham to sacrifice his own son, we should just close the book and be like, not the God I want to be a part of, right? But we know it's a test. And so that helps us a little bit, right? Because it's still a strange request. It's a head scratcher and it's a big deal. So he's asking him to sacrifice his son. We get that. Leave his family up there on the mountain. But here's what it really brings up. Can we know, or how can we know that our faith is being tested? And I reflected on this, and I think this was helpful. It was helpful for me anyway. But we know our faith is tested when we don't know how God will provide. When we're in a place where we're like, I don't know how I'm going to be provided for, and I say that God will provide, but I don't know how God is going to provide, that is a good indication that your faith in God providing is being tested, right? We know that our faith is tested when we don't know how God is going to provide. So for me, let's go back to my story here. How is God going to provide for me to get enough time to get my schoolwork done in seminary? Like, I can't fail this. Kind of important for the next phase of my life, right? How will God provide any income for us? We're both laid up and can't work. That's an issue. I don't know how God's going to do that, and I don't know ultimately how God is going to provide care for myself and for Amanda while we're both trying to recover. How will we be provided for? And for Abraham, it's the same for him. Even if he knows that this is a test of his faith, how is this going to work out, right? Abraham and Sarah have been praying for this child, and now they have this child. How is God going to fulfill this promise of having descendants through this child, so many that they become a nation and a nation that blesses all the other nations? How is that going to happen if he's left dead in a burnt offering, burnt up on this mountain that God showed him? How is that going to happen? Is there some way that God is going to then produce another child through their old worn-out bodies again? Does he have some indication that God can still raise Isaac from the dead? We don't know. So what is Abraham going to do? Let's take a look at the rest of the story, starting in verse 3, chapter 22. The next morning, Abraham got up early. He saddled his donkey, and he took two of his servants with him, along with his son Isaac. Then he chopped wood for a fire, for a burnt offering, and set out to the place that God had told him about. God had showed him where to go. On the third day of their journey, on what day? Is the third day any of importance in any of the rest of the Bible? Let's just hang on to that for a second, okay? On the third day of their journey, Abraham looked up and saw the place in the distance. All right, he's looking up onto the mountain. "Stay here with the donkey," he told his servants. "The boy and I will travel a little farther. We will worship there, and then we will come right back." Now, either Abraham is lying to his servants, or he has some indication that God will still provide something, even if he doesn't know how he will be provided for. There's something going on there, okay? Now, Abraham's not the only one to be privy to this, as you continue to read verse 6. "So Abraham placed the wood for the burnt offering on Isaac's shoulders, while he himself carried the fire and the knife. As the two of them walked on together, Isaac turned to Abraham and said, 'Father.' 'Yes, my son,' Abraham replied. 'We have the fire and the wood, but where is the sheep for the burnt offering?'" Outstanding question, right? Verse 8, "God will provide. God will provide a sheep for the burnt offering, my son." And they both continue to walk on together. There is something that Abraham has been through in the last 35 to 40 years where he is going to be like, "I'm going to trust God with this thing. This is an ultimate thing for me. And I'm going to trust that God will provide for us something, some way." Isn't this astounding? I mean, this is huge. It's like the thing that he's been most concerned about, that he most cares about. God's going like, "Are you going to withhold this from me?" Right? Now, maybe Abraham's like hoping there's something up there that he can find and do a switcheroo on God. I don't know. Is he going to take matters into his own hands again? Is he going to? Is he going to just be like, "Well, I've got the thing that I wanted, so God, you stay away," right? What's he going to do? Is he going to actually put his life and his future on the line here? Let's continue on here in verse 9. When they arrived at the place where God had told them to go, the place that God had showed him, right? Abraham built an altar and gathered the wood on it. Then he tied his son Isaac and he laid him on the altar on top of the wood. And Abraham picked up the knife to kill his son as a sacrifice. At that moment, the angel of the Lord called out from heaven, "Abraham, Abraham." "Yes, here I am." "Don't lay a hand on the boy. Don't hurt him in any way. For now I know that you truly fear God." I mean, it took 35 to 40 years, but now I know. "Because you have not withheld from me even your son, your only son." Something has developed Abraham here into being able to trust God even if he doesn't know how God will provide for him. We can see how that has an effect not just on Abraham, but people later on reading the story and reflecting on it. Verse 13, then Abraham looked up and he saw a ram caught by its horns in a thicket. So he took the ram and sacrificed it as a burnt offering in place of his son. We're going to hit that here and again, okay? In place of his son. Abraham named the place, the Lord will provide. And to this day, people still use that name as a proverb, something that directs their life, okay? Something that they take in their life when they are not sure how they will be provided for. They say this proverb, on the mountain of the Lord, it will be provided. On the mountain of the Lord, it will be provided. How am I going to have time to get my schoolwork done while I'm recovering from surgery, from a transplant surgery? On the mountain of the Lord, it will be provided. It's a reminder. It's something I can say, but I've got to live into, right? It directs you to living into something. How am I going to provide any income when we're both laid up for 2 weeks? Oh, on the mountain of the Lord, it will be provided. How are we going to be cared for and care for one another when we're both recovering from surgery? Oh, on the mountain of the Lord, it will be provided. It's something that directs you to putting the focus on who is providing and from where they are providing. From God's own space, right? His mountain, God provides. He provides for us. Now that comes along with more of a promise. This is a fulfillment of where we started 35 or 40 years ago in Genesis chapter 12. If you look at Genesis 22 verse 15, it says this, then the angel of the Lord called again to Abraham from heaven, the Lord's mountain, heaven, same thing. This is what the Lord says. Because you have obeyed me and not withheld even your son, your only son, I swear by my own name that I will certainly bless you. Listen, I said 40 years ago I was going to do it. Now certainly you can be certain of it. All right? I will multiply your descendants beyond number like the stars in the sky and the sand on the seashore. Your descendants will conquer the cities of their enemies, and through your descendants, all the nations of the earth will be blessed, all because you have obeyed me, because something has happened in Abraham that two things matched up and went together, not just saying that God will provide, but actually putting that into practice, that he really believes that, even in a ridiculous circumstance. Somehow, Abraham's faith in the God that provides a way that all families on the earth are blessed by the God that provides. That was a mouthful. Let me say it again, okay? Abraham's faith in the God that provides a way for all the families on the earth to be blessed by the God that provides, okay? Now, it's a really nice story. It's a really nice proverb. Maybe that was just for Abraham's day. They didn't have the things that you and I have to worry about, all right? It was such a different time, a different era. Well, it wasn't for the New Testament people. In fact, they saw, as they reflected on this story, something really important. Because they saw, well, what was accomplished by testing Abraham's faith? What's the point of our faith being tested and seeing how we will be provided for? One of those New Testament followers of Jesus was actually a half-brother of Jesus. His name is James, and he pastored a church in Jerusalem that was persecuted, that persecution by being cut off from their family members caused them to be really poor. They would lose jobs, they would lose their family. And he reflects on this and writes to them in James chapter 2, verse 21 and 22. Don't you remember that our ancestor Abraham was shown to be right with God by his actions when he offered his son Isaac on the altar? You see, his faith and his actions worked together. His actions made his faith complete. What does this testing of our faith do? It forces us to have some actions to go along with it. Right? If your actions don't work together with your faith, then guess what? You get to take the test again, right? But if your actions work together with your faith, then what's the point of the testing? What's the goal of it? What does it do for you and for me? It makes our faith more complete. Now, it may take 35 or 40 years, right? It may take our entire lifetime of that basic question of how I'll be provided for. Oh, yes, I have faith in this God that provides, but now I've got to actually live into it. And when you put your actions and your faith together, it makes your faith more complete. Now, for me, in my story, how did God provide for us? On the mountain of the Lord, it would be provided, right? So how did he do that? Well, we were actually able to schedule the transplant surgery in a scheduled break in seminary. Every trimester, there was a two-week period where everything shut down, and we scheduled it right for then, right? So I didn't really miss any in-class schoolwork at all. On the mountain of the Lord provided, right? I had saved up enough vacation time that I could have that 2 weeks to recover and still get a paycheck. But ultimately, my biggest question was about how we were going to be cared for as we recovered from this. And my sister-in-law, Paige, came up from Missouri to stay with us to clean our house, to feed us and make our meals, to take care of our animals, and to take care of us. On the mountain of the Lord, it will be provided. Right? So that we were able to move into this. And you learn through that. You know what? Maybe this God is worth trusting. Maybe this God really does provide if I really stop and think about it. And the story about Abraham is not even just for that day and age. It was for all of us. In fact, that's how Paul, the Apostle Paul, he understood this, and he connected Abraham and Jesus in this, right? Here's what he says in Romans chapter 4, verse 22 through 25. And because of Abraham's faith, God counted him as righteous. He did right by God, right? And when God counted him as righteous, it wasn't just for Abraham's benefit. It was recorded for our benefit too, assuring us that God will also count us as righteous if we believe in him. And who is he? Who is this God? He's the one who raised Jesus, our Lord, from the dead. See, Jesus was handed over to die because of our sins, and he was raised to life to make us right with God. His actions have a benefit for us, just like Abraham's actions in his faith have a benefit for us who want to follow in those footsteps. Jesus is the sacrifice on the mountain of the Lord that provides us with inclusion into Abraham's family, and then, therefore, the blessing that God gives through Abraham. There's no mistake that 3 days journey and 3 days he rises from the dead. There's no mistake in having no idea how God is going to provide life for this son, and then God provides life for this his own son. There's no mistake in those things. It's all about our faith and our actions working together. So it's twofold, isn't it? Faith. Do you even want to have this relationship with the God that provides through Jesus? Whether you've been in church your whole life and you haven't missed a Sunday or Wednesday night Bible study or whatever it is, or this is the first time you've ever even heard this story, we're all faced with that same question. Do you even want to have that to put your faith in, this God that provides through Jesus. Do you want that? Because if you do, that faith is going to be tested, right? So just consider that, right? And it's going to be tested in our actions. And what actions are those? Well, in the areas of our life where we struggle the most with answering the question, how will I be provided for? How will I be provided for? What area for you becomes that place where you're always trying to do things and take matters in your own hand? Or you're like, no, I'm not going to let anybody else touch this, or I want someone else to fix it, whatever it is, right? Is it your finances? Is it your health? Relationships? Your future? What's the thing that you continually face? How will it be provided for? Because that's the area you're going to get tested in. And you'll get tested in again and again and again until your faith becomes more complete. So what I want to do for you to help with this is just to bring you into a little reflective prayer process, okay? I just want you to hear these words that I'm going to pray, and you can pray along with them. We'll go nice and slow, and it's going to be for you to reflect on these things. Do you even want to have this relationship with this God that provides through Jesus? Or what are those areas that I struggle with the most? So just hear these words and pray along quietly with me. Heavenly Father, will you help me see that you are worth trusting my life with? Heavenly Father, will you help me see? I need to see it. See that you are worth trusting with my life. Tell me, show me how you provide for me. Tell me or show me how you provide for me. Remind me of your words you spoke to Abraham that are for me too. Remind me of your words you spoke to Abraham that are for me too. Jesus, show me that in this great unknown, where my feet may fail and fear surrounds me, you've never failed and you won't start now.